So it started back, I guess it's been almost 2 years now, when the leadership of Kentucky Farm Bureau got together and looked at what issues they really wanted to focus on, and they saw how much farmland was being lost. That really sort of put a spotlight on an issue that we have in agriculture in Kentucky and nationwide. And then the census numbers came out that next year, and that really demonstrated how much we're losing. 1.4 million acres lost of farmland in just Kentucky in the last 20 years.
Let me phrase that question for you straight up. Mm-hmm. So how serious is the loss of farmland in Kentucky? What numbers can we put to it? And how much of that do we feel like might be preventable if there was a way to transition this land and keep it in farming?
So 1.4 million acres lost in the last 20 years. What we're seeing is about the size of a normal average Kentucky farm is being lost every day in Kentucky. That's how much land we're losing. Now, how much of that can be prevented? Well, we know that if people have the tools and resources available to them so that they know different ways they can approach passing that land on, if they have the ability to access experts who can help advise them, and if they confront the problem, right? Instead of like, I'm not going to think about this. If they really take on the problem, we know we can get better outcomes. We have seen that happen with farm families who have been able to put in place tools that enable them to pass that land along. And that's the whole goal, is for land to stay in ag production and this is critical, in the hands of active farmers.
I know this is a tangent, but I'm still going to bring it in the discussion, because the death tax is something that has forced the sale of farmland, that when the patriarch pass and the offspring are left with a sizable tax bill, sometimes their only option is to sell in order to be able to pay. That's one element. In terms of Kentucky, I have to believe, obviously, industrial development, obviously, housing are issues. But what about the husband and wife who own the land and don't have anyone to pass it to?
So, and there's a lot of issues here. So first off, we see a lot of land that comes out of farmland because of what is considered rural residential, a lot of small home lots that are being sold. So that's a lot of the development pressure we see. We also see industrial pressure. We see other commercial developments. There's a lot of different reasons why farmland comes out of production, and it varies county by county. And certainly, we do have a lot of farm families who experience exactly what you're talking about, which is they've built their farming operation. They do not have any heirs who want to farm. And so what we really encourage them to do is, one, you can look at different ways to keep it in ag production, keep that land in ag production if you want to. And we also encourage people to look around them for other people who may have that farming interest that needs a chance, an opportunity to farm. We've got a lot of beginning farmers. We've got a lot of farmers who are looking for opportunities to enter farming, to engage. And the price of land being where it is, it really makes it challenging for them. And so if you're in a situation where, you know, you do have that farm and you wanted to see it continue, because it's important to say it's about what you want to see happen. It's about what your goals are, and you wanted to see it happen. Then let's look at, okay, what are the best legal tools to make that happen? But then also, what are the connections you can make within the community to maybe allow a farmer that's up and coming to have a chance to farm it?
Up until 2 years ago, when the farmland transition group came together, up to that point, how did the tax structure in the state, the tax structure in the nation, how was it a challenge for those who wanted to sell farmland either to another farmer, mm-hmm. or for housing development or industrial development? What were the challenges of, what's the challenge of selling farmland?
So when you go to sell farmland, basically you are going to owe capital gains taxes on the difference between what you're selling it for and your basis. And typically that's what you acquired, the value of the property for where you acquired it. And if you've had stepped up basis, which is what happens when land passes through estates, you get stepped up basis, then certainly that changes things. But that's typically where you have to pay capital gains taxes on the sale of that farmland. So what we've really tried to look at is what type of disincentive that tax structure has for families doing more orderly transition of their land and selling it to people who want to farm it, so that farmers don't run into a situation which is very common, which is we're land rich, cash poor, especially when we need that liquidity. We need that cash. So we looked at it in a couple of different levels. At the Kentucky level, there's a selling farmer tax credit, which allows farmers who sell to other farmers a tax credit that can offset some of that gain. It may offset all of it. The taxes on that gain. So that's really great. So we really wanted to expand that. So thanks to the legislature, that credit has been expanded. It now applies to if you're selling that land to anyone who's actively engaged and agrees to keep it in farmland. And we also bumped it up so that beginning farmers still get that leg up, because we really want to help beginning farmers. And then we looked at, okay, the state's important and the state policy is important, and we talked to a lot of different states about what they're doing, but we also heard from folks that even if we do more at the state level, we've got to look at the federal level and the federal capital gains rate. And so we were able to get the first provision in the tax code, working with Senator McConnell's office, get the first provision in the tax code that says if you are selling to someone who agrees to keep it in production, then you're going to get to spread payment of those cap gains over a 4-year period. And so that's the first provision we've had in the tax code, in the federal tax code, that really values keeping that land in production. Now, we'd love to see even more incentives put in that federal tax code to enable that transfer, but it's a start. It's a foothold.
So Frankfort has made some effort to help in mm-hmm. this, but there's still more work to do.
Well, the way I look at it is, we need to work on multiple levels at this problem, because there's not one reason why farmland comes out of production. There's multiple reasons. Every family situation is different. And so this tax credit piece is helping certain farmers make that transition. We do want to look at other options. We do want to look at the tax structure as a whole. And so that's what we do. We talk to a lot of people. We talk to attorneys. What do you see happening? What do you see prompting that land to come out of production? CPAs, what do you see prompting these decisions? And so, no, I think this is one element of it, but I think also we're going to find other elements that also need to be worked on as well.
Anything that's coming in this next round of the General Assembly that will help in this effort to preserve Kentucky farmland?
You know, I think we're looking at a lot of different issues. I think certainly the tax credit has done a great job, and it's been able to expand. We've expanded the usage of it. We're going to be following that closely to make sure that those changes happen. And certainly as the legislature considers other legislation that affects land use, we've always got to be looking for what we can do within that structure of whatever they're considering to incentivize keeping it in farmland.
Alita, do we have any roundabout idea how many acres might be vulnerable in the next few years? I remember we had the few years ago, there was the 66 rule that two-thirds of land was owned by people that were 66 years and older, and we knew that this volume was going to transition. Yeah. In the Commonwealth, obviously there's land that's actively engaged in an active farm, and it's probably going to stay in farming. But do we have an idea how many acres might be vulnerable coming up that we need to take action for?
Well, I know that what we see, and you mentioned two-thirds, I've heard 60%, 50 to 60% is owned by land folks 65 and older. So we are going to see a transition of trillions of dollars worth of farmland in the next 15 years. How much it matters, you know, again, if we're seeing 300 acres per day come out of production, that gives you some sense of what's at stake. I know we talk with farmers and farm families all the time. You know, some of them have, you know, sort of 300 acre farms, and they're looking to put in place something that will keep it in farming, and they don't currently have that. I'll tell you, they don't have that in place yet, and so they're looking to put that in place. But we've talked to folks with thousands of acres of farm that do not have a structure in place to keep those lands in farming. And so I guess what I would say is the challenge is we've got people at both ends of that spectrum, but what's important to realize is that there's a lot of farmland that could be subject to development or to being split, partitioned. And so every farm family needs to be looking at this as an issue if they want to keep it in farming.
I think of this, the husband and wife who have heirs. Maybe they have four heirs, one wants to farm, three doesn't. Estate planning could come very important here to address the issue. Some people just don't want to talk about it and they're determined not to, but estate planning here ahead of time could make it much easier to keep that land in a farm and all the siblings still satisfied.
And what we all say, and all the siblings still talking to each other. You know, I ask at a lot of meetings, you know, how many of you all know of families who don't talk to anyone, each other because of something that happened with the land? And hands go up because we all know of that scenario. We all know that that happens. And many times it happens because exactly the type of situation you mentioned where you've got multiple heirs. You've got one who wants to continue to farm a lot of times. They've been farming with mom and dad and they want to continue to farm. They want that responsibility on, but because of the way the estate has been structured, it's all going to be split four ways. And that includes the land. And I always tell folks, you know, it's really easy to divide a bucket of money up among four people. It's easy to make that math. It's a lot harder to divide land up. And so the easiest way people choose is they turn it into a bucket of money. So they're selling it. And many times for development or whatever. So with just a little bit of advanced planning, and there's lots of different ways they could do that. And we can talk to folks about that. We can get them connected up with attorneys and CPAs who can help them with the legal and tax pieces. But there are a lot of other options that would allow that farming heir to continue that legacy and continue to keep farming in our rural communities.